From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Today on the program, deer will soon be in the sights of hunters in Springfield, in areas that are not usually open to hunting. It's part of a plan to reduce the urban deer population around Lake Springfield. We'll talk more about that later in the program. But first, murders are up across the United States, with 2020 having the largest one-year increase in homicides on record. That's according to crime statistics released this week by the FBI. It's one of those things where if you follow local news, this should not be all that surprising.
Many lives were flipped upside down back in March of 2020 when COVID-19 began to spread across Rockford, causing businesses to shut down, people to become ill, and crime spiraled out of control.
Violence seizing the streets and drawing the national spotlight to Peoria, the city making the list of the deadliest in the country.
Neighbors in disbelief tonight after three people are shot and killed in Springfield.
The city just released crime statistics for the month of August. There were 78 murders compared with 64 in August of 2020.
Coverage of increasing homicides and gun violence in Rockford, Peoria, Springfield, and Chicago there. And it's also happening in other cities across Illinois and across the nation. But what's behind the increase? And is this a short-term blip or the start of a longer trend? To talk more about this, we're joined now by one of the foremost criminologists in Illinois. David Olson is co-director of the Center for Criminal Justice Research, Policy, and Practice at Loyola University Chicago, where he's also a professor. Dave, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, as ever, you're invited to join our conversation at 800-222-9455 if you have questions about the new crime numbers or crime in general in your part of Illinois. We'd love to hear from you. 800-222-9455 is the number, or you can always tweet us at 21st show. That's at 21st show. All right, Dave, can we begin with sort of a broad overview here? As I said, crime overall is down, one big exception, right? What's the general takeaway?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting phenomenon that I haven't really seen in studying this topic for more than 30 years. Generally, when we see crime going up or going down, we tend to see it pretty consistently across all crime types. So when we see more assaults or more robberies, we tend to see more robberies and more burglaries and things of that nature. What's unique here is that really only homicides and aggravated assaults nationally increased. All the other crimes decreased in 2020. And obviously COVID had a lot to do with the decreases, with fewer victims out or more people in their houses and burglaries not being possible. But the increase in homicides is obviously concerning. It is obviously the most serious crime. But for the most part, all other crimes saw drops in 2020.
So this increase in homicides, we saw that not only in Chicago, which of course gets a lot of media attention, not only locally, but around the country, really, but also Rockford and Springfield and other cities across Illinois. Is the increase unique to Illinois or certain cities here, or is this part of a bigger trend?
It's certainly not unique to Illinois. It's not unique to only the largest cities like Chicago. As you pointed out, in Illinois, we saw increases in a number of the cities across the state, but we're also seeing this in cities across the country. So it's one of those things that's not unique to Illinois. It's not unique to red or blue states. It's not unique just to democratically led communities or Republican led communities. It really is something that we're seeing fairly consistent across the states and most large cities.
So you mentioned earlier, this is something that's unusual to see the homicide rate diverge from other kinds of crime. Can you talk a little bit more about why you think that happened last year? You mentioned, you know, people at home. I guess you can't rob a house as easily if the people are sheltering at home 24/7.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a couple potential things at play. So one is to kind of keep in mind the idea of crime substitution. If somebody is involved in criminal behavior because they need criminal behavior and the proceeds of that to support themselves or support a drug use problem or things like that, There's a lot of different crimes they can commit. And so when one type of crime is prevented, for example, if you really can't commit burglaries because everybody's in their home during a lockdown, what other crimes might you substitute and engage in? And so that I think is potentially at play here. The other thing that's kind of buried in the crime statistics that the FBI released that I think is telling is the other crime that saw an increase was aggravated assaults. And in particular, aggravated assaults with a firearm. So these are instances where somebody's being threatened with a gun or they're being shot at with a gun. There is some evidence that the prevalence of guns in the community grew during the last couple of years. And so it could be that convergence of factors that more guns in the hands of individuals who may be involved in criminal activity may escalate the outcome of assaults or threats to where there is a lethal outcome.
Yeah, that phrase lethal outcome, because most crimes involving guns do not end up in somebody dying, right?
Yeah. And most crimes involving guns don't even result in the gun being fired. So that's an important thing. So when guns being used as a threat usually achieve what the individual using the gun for the threat intends to achieve. Victims are generally compliant. But I think what we're potentially seeing here is more assaults or more threats, more likely to be involving guns, increases the potential that altercation will escalate to a lethal outcome. As you pointed, a lethal outcome is rare, and homicides are rare, but those did increase in the past year. I think there's a lot going on. There's the issues of COVID. There's the potential issue of more guns in the hands of individuals who may be impulsive and not thinking through the consequences of their behavior. But to your point, most homicides start out as an argument or an altercation or a robbery, and they escalate to a lethal outcome in rare instances. But again, we've seen a growth in those.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Dave Olson, who's a criminologist at Loyola University, Chicago. And we're talking about the new FBI crime statistics that came out this week showing an increase, what's been described as the largest ever one-year increase in homicides across the United States and in Illinois cities. Chicago, Rockford, other cities in Illinois were not immune to this trend. But there is, Dave, one thing about this, and I should mention, if you want to join our conversation, 800-222-9455 is the number to call, 800-222-9455. Dave, one thing that is somewhat unique about Chicago, it does have more homicides than some of its comparable cities, New York and Los Angeles, right? What does that tell you?
The rate of homicides in Chicago have, at least for the past couple decades, been higher than other large cities in the country. So I think that's kind of a different question. So part of the question is, why did homicides go up last year? And a lot of people are looking for really easy solutions and pointing to things that really aren't the explanation. So why did it go up is one question, but then why is it relatively higher in some communities than others? And to your point, Chicago's had a higher homicide rate than most large cities. And I think that gets to a lot more of the long-term structural issues in the city with respect to segregation and economic opportunity and access to services and interventions that may address substance abuse issues or mental health issues or other types of things. So if you look at where the largest number of homicides were, the highest rate of homicides were in Chicago in 2020, it's essentially the same communities as was the case in the year 2000 and in the year 1990 and in the year 1980. So it tends to be concentrated in specific communities. And a lot of those communities are the ones that historically have had high rates of unemployment, limited access to economic opportunity, those kinds of things that are really the root causes that drive crime and violence and desperation and things like that. So it took a long time for those things to build up. And obviously it's not something that can be solved easily.
Yeah, these are the I don't think it was your research, but another researcher called these $1 million blocks, right? Where the city or the state, I should say, is spending $1 million on some of these blocks to incarcerate people who had lived there. You know, you mentioned a moment ago that people are looking for easy solutions and I gather maybe looking for policies to blame. You've been active in efforts to improve our criminal justice system. You served on Governor Bruce Rauner's Commission on Criminal Justice and Sentencing Reform. Do you foresee the increase in homicides imperiling what has emerged as a rare bipartisan consensus on making our criminal justice system more fair to everyone?
I hope not. I hope that people can recognize, as you know, obviously the increase in homicides is serious and we want to understand it and address it, but we can't come up with quick, you know, bumper sticker slogans on how we're going to do it. It takes a lot more effort. And I think some of the things that have been implemented in the last year that are just now starting will hopefully yield some benefit. There's been kind of an unprecedented effort to invest in the communities that are most impacted, not only by gun violence, but they're also the communities that were most impacted by COVID and COVID deaths. And they're the communities that have been most impacted by incarceration, these $1 million blocks that you describe. I think there's a lot of efforts underway to say, let's invest in these communities and not necessarily spend $1 million just to lock people up. But what if we spent $500,000 on providing opportunity and services and things like that? So the efforts underway include things that the city of Chicago is now doing for the first time, where they're trying to invest in non-police responses and efforts to address violence. There's a large investment by the state of Illinois through the marijuana tax revenue that's being generated through a program called R3, where the money is going specifically into these communities that have historically been most adversely affected by violence, but providing resources to support non-criminal justice interventions or approaches. And so I think some of those policies and practices that are really evidence-based and they're what's been found to be truly efficient and effective at reducing violence, if they are given the time and support to be implemented. And so hopefully we recognize that these programs have just begun. We can't expect them to undo decades of the conditions that led to this. So we've got to make sure we provide opportunity for them to be implemented and have the intended impact that we expect.
With just a few minutes left in our conversation, one of the critiques you do hear from people are, you know, either on one side, too many guns on the street, the gun laws aren't tough enough. From maybe a different perspective in the criminal justice system, the bail reform movement to eliminate cash bail is, you know, responsible for letting too many people out on the street who do bad things. What is your perspective on those critiques?
Yeah, I think one of the critiques is one that's easily offered, this idea that it's bail reform. I think the important thing with that is that the statewide bail reform effort has not yet been implemented. It doesn't take effect till January of 2023, so that's not explaining it. Some point to the bail reform that occurred specifically in Cook County, but it's important to keep in mind that bail reform took place in 2017, and research by a colleague and I found that that reform had no impact on violence or gun violence in the city for the 3 years after the policy that we followed it. So we looked at it through 2019 and it didn't have an effect. So it's hard to believe that it's now having an effect, right? 4 years afterwards. So I think those are kind of easy things that people bring out, that it's a simple solution of just, we just need to lock more people up pre-trial. That isn't necessarily the case. as for the issue with guns, I think that may be something that's behind this. There is some evidence based on research that the University of Chicago has done that suggests that the prevalence of gun carrying may be on the rise in Chicago. Research that we've done has definitely found that the police are arresting more people possessing guns illegally. So that could be part of what's behind this, but we have to keep in mind that not everybody possessing a gun is intent on using it to commit crime. A lot of people, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in Illinois legally carry concealed handguns for purposes of self-protection, but there's also a segment that does the same behavior. They just haven't gone through the process of obtaining a permit. But I think I'm confident saying that, you know, handguns in the hands of 18 or 19 year olds who are influenced by their peers and extremely impulsive and don't think through the consequences of their behaviors is never a good thing.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there. Dave Olson is with Loyola University Chicago. Dave, thanks so much for being with us.
Great. Thank you.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us.